Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and this week's guest is a brilliant comedian, writer, and actress who is known for appearances on Live at the Apollo, Have I Got News for You, and Mock the Week. Please welcome Ria Lena.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's great to catch up. You look as cozy as I want to feel in your dressing gown now.
Yes, I'm totally recording from home, and we're saving on heating. So we're not putting the heating on, so I'm in a dressing gown, but I'm sneakily also running a little blow heater under the desk, so I'm not sure that I'm saving any money.
I'm so glad you said that, because you've reminded me I also have a blow heater on that I'm going to turn off for the sake of the audio. 1 second.
All right, done. Please hold. Oh, and we're back. I did some hold music for your listeners.
You did, Pete. You can leave all of that in. Because this is a reality, right? We're working from home. The days are gone of traveling to do a podcast. And, you know, I don't think I'd go back to it. I used to do all the recording in person. I thought that was the way. And now the idea of inviting someone into my home and having to tidy before a recording... I don't know about that.
It's horrifying. When I do someone else's podcast, I do like to go to them. There is a magic of being in person, isn't there? There's like, you know, pheromones and stuff that fly around and make everybody like humor pheromones, not just sex pheromones. I know that's confusing given the nature of this particular podcast. There is something about being in person, but there's also something about being able to switch off, shut your laptop, and just be at home. The lack of commute is glorious.
Yes. Well, this is it. And I love the brief sliver of honesty there where we found out your true strategy is make every host fall in love with you.
Obviously, fire out hormones. Well, you know what? I don't think I'm necessarily firing them so much as nail bombing the room as I walk in and just kind of, you know. But that's the danger of coming out of a very long-term relationship is that you have absolutely no control over what your mind or your body does. It just does it. And you're like, I'm so sorry. Did I just hit you in the face with those? Let me wipe that off.
No, it's an adjustment. And, you know, one of the things talking to a friend of mine that's recently had a divorce is refinding tact, refinding a certain level that you lose at a long-term relationship where the directness is the communication style. You can call that person whatever you want with love. I have a different friend that fully calls her husband Dickhead, adoringly. That's her favorite nickname for him, which makes sense, except when they're in public. And she's a tiny Muslim lady with a hijab. And when she shouts Dickhead across a shop, obviously somebody thinks she's been attacked. But, you know, so...
Oh, interesting. Right. And then who answers the call, though? What does her partner look like?
Big, very tall, very muscular... South Asian male.
Oh, wow. Okay. Comes to the rescue. Or answers to the name Dickhead. Yeah, well, that is it. You have an openness, don't you, with your partner in a relationship where you know that if you're having a bad day, you can push it further than you would otherwise might push a friend. And there is a certain amount of forgiveness and understanding. Like you are your worst self or your least masked self at home with that person. And of course, as we all know, that just starts with the basics. You start with, will I fart in front of this person? Can I poo when they're in the house? And then, you know, you build all the way up to calling them dickhead in public. And then when you leave a relationship, you then have to start all over again with somebody. And then you have to go all the way back to best behavior. And I don't know, I'm too long in the game. I'm too old in the tooth to do that. I know that young women, you're supposed to get dressed up and show your best self on your first date. And I'm like, what's the point? I'm going to show up the way that you're going to see me 80% of the time. Okay. And if that is acceptable to you, then we're going to be all right. And if that is not enough effort for you, then that's it. Sayonara. Next, please.
Yeah. I had a previous guest called Miss Peppermint who I interviewed, and she has a rule that on her first dates, there's no makeup.
Yes. Well, I don't wear makeup anyway. So the idea of even trying to, you know, if I did put it on, it would probably scare them off unless it was Halloween. I tell them that, though. And actually, now with all the online dating apps, I will send them a non-makeup picture. I'll go, look, I don't wear makeup. This is me without makeup. And I have had people ceremoniously unmatch me as soon as they've seen my face, which can be quite harsh where you go, wow, okay, thanks for that. But what I tend to do is do that reverse psychology of going, you know what? I don't wear makeup. And a lot of guys, they can't hack it. They don't like it. And then those men are like, no, no, no. I can stick through it. And then at least they don't just unmatch. They go, oh, you're really pretty, but you're not my type or whatever. And you go, fair enough.
That's an interesting strategy. Use their toxic masculinity against them.
Oh, very
the catch
so.
Is, are you then still going to end up with a toxic masculine guy at the end of that?
Oh, it's never, you know, it's never going to go. Like these, you know what, they might toxically masculinity, that's a word. They might actually, they might respond, at least they might show some manners and respond after the picture. But if they really don't like what I look like, it's not even going to get to a meet. Let's be honest.
Yeah, it's true. But I really respect the coming out of the long-term relationship and not giving into a lot of that pressure of like, okay, now I've got to fold so much of me back in and pretend to be a version of me that I've, you know, decided is going to be tolerable to the world. Because...
Oh.
What?
No, I was listening to that going, who's doing that? Who gets to their mid-30s and goes, I'm going to fold myself back? No, you see, I think that's part of what is so amazing about the Me Too movement is the fact that we have more space as women. We have more space to spread out and just do what we do and be able to do it. And I'm taking full advantage of that. Yeah, I'm going, you know what? I don't have time for people's bullshit. I have stuff to do. I have a career to get on with. I have a life to lead because I have been married with kids for the last 18 years of my life. And I am, you know, this is my time to live for me. And I don't have time to move over for insecure men or people who have ideas of what I should or shouldn't do. Forget that. Does it make dating harder? Yes, it does. So much harder. But what are all these, you know, what are all these little fridge magnets that we tell ourselves? You know, well, if they don't like it, they're not worth it. If they can't handle you at your worst, they don't deserve you at your best, blah, 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 blah. But that's the truth of it, is that by dating this way, I'm going to have a much lower success rate. But when I finally do get successful, it's going to be very successful because there won't be any more, you know, I've kind of brought the skeleton in the closet with me on the date.
I love that. Because you know what? There's so many people that have all those slogans and they really don't live by them, particularly these people online. I don't even want to call them influencers.
Well, you just have to pick your playground. I mean, I do like Instagram for how positive. There's a lot of positivity on Instagram. And I do think that in the big scheme of things, I find it healthier than some of the other social media platforms that you could spend a lot of time doom scrolling on. But I am aware that, of course, this is everyone showing off the best side of things. Even myself, I don't post pictures that I don't like me in. If I'm not looking good with no makeup that day, or if it's first thing in the morning and, you know, my whole face is still puffy from sleep, I'm not going to post that. I admit that myself. I always show my best self. But there is a positivity to that. You go somewhere like TikTok. TikTok's more real. I find TikTok fascinating and I learn so much on TikTok. I find it a great place to learn, but it isn't as safe a mental health environment to swim in for very long. And I think that that's something that everyone has to, you know, you have to take that with a pinch of salt. Same with Twitter. When I go on Twitter, I feel like I've gone to the pool, you know, it's a nice outdoor pool and I've got myself a little patch on the grass with my towel. But for the most part, I'm going to watch everybody else swim. I might dip a toe in. I might get, you know, if it's a really hot day, I might have a little dip just to cool myself off. But otherwise, I'm on the side of the pool because sometimes, you know, there's sharks. There's sharks in the pool, basically.
Yes, yes. And I'm very much also an observer on Twitter. I also think I might need to, like, tune up who I'm following a bit because it's too political on my feed. And so I go onto Twitter and it's going into the trenches. And I'm seeing the extreme opinions of everything. And even the extreme opinions on my side of the fence, it's exhausting a bit, you know, where you're just, oh, there's 10 more things that are fucked up about the world I didn't know 2 minutes ago. That's a lot. I feel like TikTok's maybe a little bit the same, where it's the content to me is a bit aggressive sometimes.
I think there is a lot of forthrightness on TikTok that I'm amazed at how... I'm amazed at it. But then I'm autistic, so I have always sat kind of on the outskirts of whatever society or community I'm in and done more watching than getting involved in. But what I've always marveled at is how there are, let's call them in-crowd people, where there are certain users on TikTok that are able to stitch with videos and be quite critical of other people's work and still get away with it. I always feel like if I were to do that once, all of TikTok would pile on me from all sides and go, how dare you? So I'm just going to stick to a place of niceness, especially towards fellow users for now. Maybe it comes with the confidence comes from having followers. Maybe once you have 100K or 200, you know, a quarter of a million followers, maybe you do feel the confidence to do that. And I think it's important to also say that, you know, there's a lot of opinions that do need to be heard. And I think both on TikTok and on Twitter, I have to be grateful for everyone who is yelling about things because, A, as you've just said, it informs us and it's important to know that those opinions are out there. But B, if we're sitting back and being a little bit more passive, if everyone did what we did, nothing would change. And then we would just have, you know, we'd have a perpetuation of the same problems. And it is the fact that there are people out there that are activists and that are yelling and that are shouting that things are shifting and changing. And so I'm also very grateful to those people who are built that way, that they are built that way, because I'm keenly aware that I'm not built that way. I'm always going to try and do my bit to help within my capability, but mucking in and directly arguing with other people, not really ever going to be my way of helping.
Yeah, no, I get that. You're such an intellectual. I get it why every blurb I read about you, it mentions your intelligence, because it comes through in the high points, the highbrow points and the lowbrow points. And no, I agree. I think I do a lot of my going back and forth with people in person, which I think in nowadays is even stranger in our very digital landscape. But no, I appreciate that you own these things. And I think it's, you know, a lovely way of kind of letting people in, if we circle back to dating, that you show up on the day and do it yourself. And, you know, people like it or they don't, and they can make their decision quickly in the same way you're looking to make that decision quickly on the other side, and nobody wastes anybody's time. And, you know, I think I've kind of also skipped to that. I've had a lot of therapy versus like the long-term relationship. That's how I've got to be so honest. But I think there's so much to be said for it. And so when you had your divorce, how long was it until you were starting to feel ready to go out there and date?
It was 5.5 years. They say that women leave emotionally and then they leave physically, and men leave physically and then leave emotionally in relationships. And obviously that's a huge generalization. But what it essentially means is that when women finally physically move on, they're ready to move on. You know, if they leave the house or they, you know, they make a huge change. And I think that that was definitely true for me. We drifted apart over the years and we came to a purgatory where we were no longer together, but we were not apart. And I'm going to use this phrase and everyone listening will cringe, and I apologize in advance, but I truly understood when it finally happened what Gwyneth Paltrow and Chris Martin meant when they said they consciously uncoupled, because you do have to consciously uncouple from somebody after you've been together with them for that long. So even though I had sort of made my intentions clear before the pandemic, that I had consciously uncoupled part of the relationship, which is, I suppose, the one that everyone thinks of first is the sexual aspects. The sex pillar of any relationship is usually what makes it different to any other friendship. Because you can live with someone, you can be flatmates with someone, you can even buy a house together with a friend, you can, you know, have a household, have a community, friendships and everything. If you're not having sex, we don't consider you a couple. The moment you add that sexual element, for the most part, then you end up with, or a sexual loyalty to each other, then that's when it becomes a relationship. So we uncoupled sexually long before we uncoupled as a couple. And so it wasn't until after the pandemic, I think it was really the pandemic that made me realize either A, I'm ready to move on, or B, I'm lonely and want to move on. One of those two. And so it's only been since the pandemic that I've started looking at dating or even admitting it. Because I think that's the other thing. When you've been married for so long, and marriage has a place in our hierarchy, we see people who are married with a higher status than we see unmarried people. And we're slowly getting away from that. But even when I was pregnant with my first kid, I wasn't married at that point. But it spurned me to get married because I was so tired of people judging me for looking so young and being so young. I mean, I was just in my 20s, I think. I was pregnant and they just kept looking at me with that kind of like, oh, did we mean this to happen? Was this a mistake? You know, and I would go to all my medical appointments alone because I'm medically trained. I didn't need moral support to have a scan or a blood test. And then they go, oh, is the father in the picture? You know, I just had all that. And I got so sick of it. I just thought, I'm just going to get married so I can say my husband. Oh, my husband couldn't make it. My husband's at work. My husband's the father. And it genuinely made things so much easier.
Can we just pause on that, though? Because it's such a weird thing. Because the way you describe it there, you know, and I've come across it at times myself, where it just feels like people are trying to decide, what is the correct amount for me to pity you? And the answer is always not at all. Like, that's not helpful. That's not doing what you think it's doing. It's judgment dressed up as a kind of weird morality.
Oh, I mean, we don't have time for that in this podcast. But yes, I think the whole concept that we can look at anybody else's life and pass judgment is a huge issue that we have in society right now. But it is fundamentally why we have laws about who can marry, who can't marry, who can identify how, what kind of surgery allows you to be, you know, to change your birth certificate or not change your birth. You know, all of these things is other people judging other people's lives. How late can you carry a pregnancy to term? And whose decision is that, whether you do or you don't? These are all based on moral decisions that person A is making about person B's life. I mean, look at lawmakers in the U.S. I think they're mainly male. I know. They're mainly male. And they're making all sorts of laws about, and you can see it in the laws. You can see that access to contraception is not universal on healthcare, but access to Viagra, much easier to get a hold of because the male lawmakers have gone, well, women should just control themselves. They shouldn't be sleeping around anyway. And if they do sleep around, then they should and continue to be pregnant. Oh, can a man not have sex? Well, we must fix that straight away. How dare he not be able to get it up? We must give him something to help him get it up. You can see that. It's purely people judging other people's lives.
Yeah. You're so right. And I don't know why we keep letting it slide so often, right? Because we're waking up more and more to, you know, how that's involved in our politics. But I think kind of day to day, it still goes unchecked a lot. And it's ironic because none of us like to be judged. So why do we keep doing it?
To other people, you know what it is? It's human nature, though, isn't it? Who doesn't love gossip? Who doesn't love a bit of gossip? And that is essentially a form of judgment, isn't it?
And so how do we draw the line? So I'm like, what is harmless gossip and what is detrimental to people? I think you've got the answer if anyone does.
Let me dig deep for this one. I know, but I hate the answer. I mean, the answer is fundamentally all gossip is probably harmful. That's not true. I think it depends on the action that comes from the action of discussing it. If you hear, so gossip, for example, a friend of mine, their house burned down the other day. And I don't know how the fire started, but that's irrelevant. The fact is they need help. Now, I got told that through another friend. Technically, it's gossip. Did you hear? So-and-so's house burned down. But my reaction was to immediately message them and go, if you need anything, if you need any help, you know, if I can gig and fundraise to help, you know, help pay for some of the damage, let me know. And that was it. That was my one message, because obviously I wasn't going to chase and go, so when do you want me to do a gig to fundraise for you? Just leave it. And they got back to me a couple of days later and said, thank you, I'm still in shock and the rest of it. But that was technically gossip. But if we end up doing a fundraiser, I would say that that has stemmed from the action that came from somebody telling me, did you hear that so-and-so's house burned down? So I think it really depends on how you respond to gossip as to whether it's a positive or a negative.
Yeah, I love that. Good intentions. And I'd interrupted you there. You got as far as telling me about getting married, part of the motivation being judgment.
Right. About judgment. So I had to undo my own judgment in my head, because when you come out of being a wife and you go back to being a single woman, it for me, the struggle was allowing others to see me as a sexual person, because I was very used to not being seen that way. You know, when you go out with a group of friends and the girls are all single and you're not, you stand on the side and you're like, no, you all have fun. I'm taken. I'm out of this. And then to suddenly be, for lack of a better phrase, air quotes, fair game.
Back on the slab.
Available for scrutiny. That was something that I had to adjust in myself. I had to come out of that and go, okay, maybe I presume, because this is not my story, but I presume for those that have been in and out of relationships that have lasted 3, 4, 5 years or 7 years, maybe it's an adjustment that's easier to make. Maybe you can just back from being, okay, I'm taken to I'm single to I'm taken to I'm single. And the way that you're viewed, because even putting yourself on a dating app, you're essentially advertising yourself for sex. that's what it is. Yes, eventually you're hoping, you know, a lot of people are hoping for relationships, and there are successful relationships that come from online dating. We see it all of the time. And I'm actually always heartened when I do hear of a successful dating app story, because generally I think the majority of experiences on dating apps are horrific. But it's a weird one for me to position myself that way and to go, okay, well, and we talked about this earlier, how much do you put of yourself out there? Yeah. How much do I go, hey, I'm open to it? You know, how much do you put, how much sex or what kind of sex or no sex? Or it all suddenly becomes almost open to conversation. And I find that very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Not that we go around discussing everyone's sex lives. That's not what I mean. But it is, I'm talking about just the representation of what you are putting out there once you're single. I don't go around and look at everybody, all of my friends that are single, and go, I wonder what kind of sex and how much sex they like. Nobody does that. But you still...
I think a lot of the men,
oh, this friend
that
would go really well with that friend. Oh, say that again.
I think a lot of the men are doing that still.
Well, that makes me uncomfortable. Yeah. I don't like it. What if I just want to like have coffee and go bowling?
But you know, you are so right. There's such vulnerability there. And I think that's a big explanation on like why you so often come across like blank profiles, or you come across profiles where people's description is aggressive, or you know, people have loads of photos of them in groups and you can't really tell which one they are. I think a lot of this, consciously or not, is trying to balance out that vulnerability, because you are putting a sign out and saying, I'm single and I am open to / keen for that to change. Come at me. I don't know. I feel like this many years into dating apps, that still doesn't feel normal.
No, it doesn't. It feels like a cattle auction. The only difference is you're putting yourself up for auction. That's the only difference. And I'm still adjusting that to a certain extent. Because I think this is what we all have to remind ourselves, is that the way that I don't like being viewed is exactly how I'm viewing every other profile that I look at. So I have to bear that in mind, is just go, well, hang on, I'm assessing this profile for the piece of meat that it is. So how can I be upset when they look at me for the piece of meat that I am basically going, hey, want to attach yourself to this piece of meat? Because that's the first step, isn't it? The first step is you look at the picture and you go, would I shag this person? That is it. Would I shag this person? There's nothing else. Not would I enjoy conversation with them? Would I, you know, want to make kids with them? You know, can they cook? It's would I shag this person? That is the first thing that we do on a dating app.
Yeah. And I was talking to a friend of mine, a fellow comic, Elena Gabrielle, about this the other week, where, you know, we were talking about how often it's assumed that if you're a comedian or if you're in the public eye, you're going to be good at this stuff because you're used to kind of marketing yourself and selling tickets. But you're selling tickets to a pre-planned set of material and things that you've practiced and worked on and that you know go down well with a crowd. Dating is... you're selling just soul. You're like, this is me. Do you want to know my secrets? Do you want to know what I look like naked? All of these things you might find out. Mm. I don't think we can ever be used to that.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very good point that your friend made.
And I think that's part of the reason why marriage, like you said, it is different when you come out of a marriage, because we hold that so high in society. But then also, I think part of the reason we continue to do that is because people are looking for that out. From dating, people, you know, want to buy into this idea of never again, done, off the market forever. And not all marriages are forever. There's never that guarantee, but we really want there to be.
I don't know that everyone does. My sister's very non-committal in that she doesn't want to be tied down. She doesn't want
to be. Oh, I'm not saying everyone wants the same.
No, but I think the point is really interesting. Starting with the comedian point, yes, who we are on stage is an extension of ourselves. It's a character. Even though it is your name, you're not an actor. You're not Tom Hiddleston playing Loki. You are Rialina playing Rialina. But Rialina in the green room is not Rialina on stage and is not Rialina at home, you know, first thing in the morning when the alarm goes off. They're different people. And that's harder for maybe punters to always understand, is that you're not the same person. And yes, I do believe if dating was a more pleasant experience, if the dating apps, if there was a way, for example, of creating an app where you vetted everybody and you knew for a fact that nobody on that app was ever going to ghost, that they were all going to be polite, that they were all going to say their please and thank yous and, oh my goodness, that was a lovely date, thank you so much, but I'm not interested in a second one or whatever it is, then I think everyone would enjoy dating. I think it's the fact that we come across a range of humanity that feels absolutely no loyalty to people they've never met. And that's natural human nature. If I meet someone on an app and we talk for half an hour and the next day it never picks up again, and that's it. Do I feel like I need to go back and say to them, hey, thanks for that half hour chat. That was fun, but I won't be taking this further. Or do I just unmatch them because it's clearly dead and they've probably forgot about me and it's been sitting there for a week in my inbox. The reason that meeting in real life can sometimes work better is because, and they've done studies on this, it's because if you've met in real life, in some way your lives are connected. It might be through friends of friends. It might be at work. But you have an obligation or a connection that means that you can't just walk away from that the way that you can from someone that you meet on an app who lives across town, works in a field that you've never heard of, has a group of friends and goes to pubs that you've never been to and never would again.
Who may or may not be involved. Two of you.
Well, oh, this is a gender difference. I don't think I've come across a male bot, but I hear all the time from guys about how they're at risk of female bots and catfishing and all sorts of pitfalls that I'm going. I've had more than one guy go, I don't know if you're real. And I went, where do you think I got the pictures from? but guys are like, I don't think you're real.
I've definitely had situations with that. I've wondered, or that the conversation seems suspicious. I've also had it where people have thought, I'm not real. So I've been both sides of this. And that's a weird question to try and answer. I'm like, well, I know I am, but I also don't know how to prove it to you.
Well, I thought that's when you meet up. That's the best way to prove it, is to meet up and be like, hey, yeah, I'm the person in my photos. And those photos are recent, because that happens all the time. I asked one guy that I went on a date with why his photo. I was like, why are your photos so old? And he said, I don't take a lot of photos of myself and they're my best photos. And I went, but you're 40 and they were when you were 28. Like, you can't, that's not.
Or sabotaging.
It's not about showing your best. That's the difference. You know, that's where I say I show up with no makeup. This guy was going to show his best self. And I went, but I don't get access to your best self. That was 12 years ago.
We almost need a term for that.
You need to show me who you are now.
It's like sleuth catfishing or something. It's like. Cat finning. So something's happening.
Dog fishing.
Dog fishing.
No, I don't know. Is that a thing? We'll
age
make it
fishing,
a thing.
Maybe.
Age fishing. It's the only way to really counteract that is to only allow selfies to be taken in the app that
put you put a timestamp on there.
Yeah, this was taken at this time. This is me right now, which is not a bad idea, but it's also how they verify profiles. So it's a little bit. It would actually remove the need to verify a profile, wouldn't it? If you had to take a selfie in order to be on the app, if one of your photos had to be your taken when I set up my profile selfie.
Maybe we've solved it. My instant reaction to that is...
Good meeting.
I hate selfies, though, so that would probably keep me off the app. But equally, I'm not really sure if I want to be on the apps anymore either. So multiple solves.
But, let me ask you this then, because... I think there's a lot to be said for, as you know, when you go and meet someone, you probably know within the first 5-10 minutes if it's going to work out, right? You can just go yes or no, or I'll give this person a chance or no. And you know within 5-10 minutes if it's a definite no. And so that leads me to think maybe I should try speed dating, because speed dating, you meet everyone in person straight away.
Yeah.
You can know straight away. You've only got 3 minutes. I thought that's a great idea. But this is where the dating apps have screwed with our minds. On a dating app, I can run through a couple hundred men in a night? You know, just swipe. You can go through tons of them, a full range. I could go, oh, actually, let's change eye color. Let's change political preference. Let's change radius. And I can just bring in tons of guys and vet them. Speed dating, when you show up, the 20 guys that are there are the 20 guys that are there. And if you look around and go, nope, that's it. You're done. There's no other option. You're just going to have to sit there and go through a bunch of guys that you already know that you're not going to be interested in. And it's such a small pool. And that's where before 20 guys in one night, you'd be like, that's a great ratio. And now we're going, but what if none of them are any good?
That is an excellent point. I love that. And also, you're so right about the dating apps in that they trick us into making it feel productive. I kind of feel like that's social media in general, that we can be swiping and we can be liking, we can be sending memes to friends, and it feels social and it feels productive and actually like...
it's very minimal human interaction. It doesn't really satiate us much. Maybe that's why we'll scroll for half an hour and not realize. So, you know, that's the thing. You can be getting a lot of matches, but how many of those people do you actually meet? Like, how many people do you need to swipe on to get to meet 20 people in person? Doesn't seem so productive then.
There you go. And that's the trick of it, isn't it? I mean, how long would it take? I don't think I've met 20 people in a year. I don't think I've met in person 20 people off of apps.
And I've met a load of people where it wasn't via apps, you know, but then we're scared of having those attractions in person because we're used to like, oh no, but I have the faux comfortability of we both swiped right on each other and therefore it's safe for me to flirt.
Right.
You know?
Yes, there is something to be said for the match gives you that little hit of dopamine, doesn't it? Oh, somebody I liked me back. And then you go and check the app goes, you have a match. And you go, ooh, this is exciting. And then you go and check and you go, I don't remember swiping on that person.
Yeah, you have that pump of audacity to do something about it. And then you're like, well, maybe tomorrow or maybe the next notification. It's wild. And, you know, talking about the pitfalls and you mentioning ghosting, you have a dating story to share of one of these guys.
Yes, this is interesting. I was going to go back and check our original conversation, but I unmatched them, so I can't look at it. But I matched with someone on a dating app, and the conversation seemed quite good. Oh, maybe we moved to WhatsApp early enough. I don't like to move to WhatsApp too soon because otherwise you're handing out your number willy-nilly to people, mm-hmm. and that's just not good, honestly. So usually I won't give them my number until I've met them in person and I've liked them enough to meet them again. Uh-huh. And actually one guy refused to meet me because of that. He just went, well, how do I know that you're real? I only do phone calls first. And I went, well, I don't give out my number until I've met you. It just became clear that he was going to be a dick about it. And I wasn't going to budge from my position of safety. And also when he started to push on it, I was thinking, I've told you this is about my safety as a woman. Mm-hmm. And he went, I don't understand. What could they possibly do with your number? And I went, you don't need to understand what the dangers are. You just need to appreciate that my safety is at risk. And when you start questioning that, it makes me go, I wouldn't feel safe with you one-on-one because you're already not listening to my no, that's my boundary, and you're already trying to trample all over it. So that was an automatic no.
Yeah. Which is one thing on that, my new favorite phrase is, I don't need you to believe me, I just need you to trust me. And it shuts it down because A, the wording of it confuses people, but it makes sense to me. And B, it's like, it's basically me saying, I'm not asking to go back and forth on this. This is my reality. You're either going to accept it or you're not.
Yeah, interesting phrasing of it. I totally agree with the point of it. But my initial reaction when you said, I don't need you to believe me, I need you to trust me, is as a woman who's been married for 20 years, you don't trust your husband. You don't trust them with shit. Did you get the butter? Can you trust me? I'm going to get the butter. Do you know how many times you have not gotten the butter? You know how, if you text me, I'll get the butter. Do you know how many times I've texted you and you've not gotten the butter? Don't ask me to trust you. Just get the butter is what my initial reaction was to that particular phrase. But it makes perfect sense when you actually outline it. And by the way, did you get the butter I asked for this podcast?
You know what? It'll be with you really soon.
I hope so.
No further questions at this time.
Much I miss Irish butter because since Brexit, can't get Kerrygold, and it really grinds my teeth.
I think you won't be offended by this, but like my new favorite thing to say to my friends in the UK is, "What is your country?" I was literally on the phone with my mate Ace the other day, and he was doing his like online shop, and there were no eggs. There were no eggs left at Asda. I was like, what is your country?
I tell you what it is. It's Squid Game. It's Squid Game. And up at the top is a bunch of Tories with fancy cocktails looking out the window as we die one by one.
The shadow of a former empire. Bless you all. It's end of times.
Just horrific.
I'm going to lose some listeners for that. Anyway, sorry. Go on before I say anything regret.
Let's get them back with a ghosting story. So match him online and we're chatting and he lives like an hour's commute away from me, essentially. And I said, oh, that's quite far. And not in London terms, an hour on the tube is fine. You get a book, you listen to a podcast, you do the commute. But this was a tube and a bus. And that, for a Londoner, that's far. And I was like, oh, that's alone, that alone is enough for me to go, oh, I can't be bothered with this. But he said he was moving. I said, oh, where are you moving? He said, actually, in 3 weeks, I'm going to be moving to place X. And he didn't know where I lived at that point, but place X was only a 20-minute walk from my house. And I went, oh, that actually is amazing. Like, that's brilliant because nobody lives near me. Nobody lives where I live. And I went, not only are you moving, but you're moving to somewhere so convenient. And then that lifted probably my view of that relationship higher than I should have lifted it in my mind. And he's going to move in 3 weeks. And he had already, he told me, put down a 6-month deposit on the place. And he kind of knew that, you know, it was one of these things where the landlord was like a friend slash business person. You know what I mean? It's one of these connections and the friend had the flat. So he put the down payment to guarantee the flat. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So we meet.
The real reason why no one can afford to live in London.
No, because it's all rented out to people's friends. It's all nepotistic and the rest of it. But we then meet, we go on a date. It goes really well. There's, you know, there's good chemistry. And actually we fall into a dating pattern really, really quickly. So about 3 weeks we're dating. And we talk to each other every day. We're seeing each other every other day. You know, I've been to his old place, you know, the tube and the bus, our way. He's like, let me get you an Uber back to the station. And I'm going, there's a bus stop right outside your house. It's fine. But thank you. That's very sweet. And then we met on an app and we'd agreed. I prefer it. He preferred it. I don't like to date multiple people at one time. So while I was focusing on that, I wasn't dating other people, but I was still on the app. Not as in as a backup, but I actually did cancel my subscription on the app. But because you pay for a month at a time, it wasn't going to expire for a couple of weeks. So 3 weeks later, the day before he's supposed to move house, we end up in a bit of a fight because I'm still on the app. And I went, well, I'm on the app because I canceled it after the last payment and it's not going to expire until a week from now. So yes, I'm on the app, but I'm not on the app. If that makes sense.
And had you had a conversation about exclusivity or anything?
Well, we'd agreed to date exclusively. And the whole conversation about dating versus going out, that was a whole other thing. And what the definition of that is, I still don't understand. I'm like, so we're dating or we're going out? And he's like, no, we're just dating. I said, but we're not dating other people. He went, no. So then we're going out. No, we're just dating.
I love it when they have all the opinions on your boundaries, but you're not allowed to know and understand any of theirs. But go on.
Well, funny you should say that, because part of the argument was of the fact that he was still on the app. And I was like, so wait, I have to come off the app? He's like, yeah. He said, but you're you, and you'll probably be able to get back off the app very easily. They'll probably let you back in. But I'm me, and I'm nobody, and I don't want to stop the app because I might not be able to get back on again. And also, it's a networking app, and I also use it for networking. You know how a lot of dating apps are like, are you here for friends, or are you here for dating? And he's like, I kind of also use it for that. And I was going, mm-hmm. So the argument was, I should be off the app, but he can stay on the app. And I went, right. So Friday, we fight, we don't talk. Now, Saturday comes around. I don't message him because A, the ball is in his court, but B, it's the day he's moving. And I thought, I'm not going to bother him. He's moving house and everything else. So I'd leave it. But I was kind of wondering, when am I going to hear from him? And then suddenly on Instagram, he posts something that suggests that he's been out for the evening. Because I was, oh, I know. I forgot about it. We had the fight on Friday, but we had already arranged to meet up Saturday night because he was moving house. He was going to have to sleep in a hotel. And I was like, okay, it made sense for me to join him on Saturday night at the hotel. So Saturday morning, I'm not going to bother him. He's moving house, but I was expecting to hear from him because we had these plans to go to a hotel. And I'm waiting and waiting and waiting. And then finally, at some point in the evening, he posts like he's been out for the evening to some ticketed event. And so I texted him and went, oh, I guess we're done then, are we? Because I was like, I've been ghosted before. You've ghosted me. Fine. I've been here. I know what to do. I just went, okay, I assume this is over. Bye. He then calls me very late at night and goes, no. We just had a fight. Why do you think we're over? And I was like, because we were supposed to meet up and then you're actually going out for the evening. What's going on? And he goes, oh, well, funny story. The movers messed up. The movers didn't show up. And I went, oh. And he said, but actually, it was okay because the landlord, I couldn't get in touch with the landlord for 2 days and he forgot that we agreed that I would move in today. So I couldn't get the keys from him. So it actually all worked out. And I went, okay. explained the ticketed event, he went, well, it was such a shit show of a day that when a friend of mine called me and said, I have a spare ticket, I just thought, you know what? I'm just going to take the ticket and blow off some steam. And I thought, that happens. It seems reasonable. Fine. And I said, so are we still meeting? Are we still going to a hotel? And he went, no, I'm going to sleep here. And I said, shall I come round? He went, no, no, no. The place is in boxes. And I refuse to have anyone round when the place is in that state. He was a bit house proud. And he was like, I'm not going to have you over when the place is in boxes. I'm just going to sleep here tonight. And I went, okay. And then Sunday, we weren't ever going to meet. We chat. Monday morning, we're going to meet Monday night. We agreed on Sunday, we would meet Monday night. And again, we will stay in a hotel because his place is in boxes and he hasn't moved yet. Fine. Monday morning, he texts me, good morning. How are you? I text him back. Hi, I'm fine. Blah, 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 blah. Then throughout the day, I know when he works, he's not always able to answer his WhatsApp. Fine. I text him throughout the day. And then halfway through the day, about 1 o'clock, my message isn't read and it isn't read and it isn't read and it isn't read. And as the day goes on, I'm going, this is weird. He hasn't responded to me since he said good morning and I haven't heard anything. And now none of his messages have been read because sometimes he'd read them but not respond. By the evening, I'm going, what's going on? And I've gone, now he's ghosted me. Because I realized he's turned off his read receipts. That's why none of them look red. So he actively stopped responding, turned off his read receipts, and I never heard from him again. But 2 days later, I know from various sources that he flew to the States, and he ended up staying in the States for 2 months. So 2 days later, goes off, flies to the States, and that was it. The end of this story, though, isn't done, because then what happened is he comes back after 2 months, at which point I did my customary block, 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 unmatch. Thank you very much. Now, he was following me on Instagram, and I suddenly, out of the blue, get a message 2.5 months after he ghosted me, and it just said, have you blocked me? ! I'm like, yes, I've blocked you. You just ghosted me on a day and then disappeared. He messaged me once in that 2 months and went, hey, can we talk? But he sent it at 4 a.m. And when I woke up at 10 and went, what about? He never responded. So I was like, fine, you don't want to talk. And then the reason that I'd blocked him, though, wasn't just because he'd done the ghosting, but because after he came, I'm telling the story all out of order, I'm sorry. But after he came back from the U.S., I checked his Instagram one day. He'd posted a story and he'd put up his Christmas tree in his old house, in the old place that was more than an hour away. So to date, he's never moved to the place that he supposedly paid 6 months in advance for. Never moved. And I don't know. And I was like, so did we actually have a fight about whether or not I'm on the dating app? Or did you realize that you told me that you were going to move and the day came and you weren't going to move and you had to, like, you didn't know how to cover your tracks and go, actually, that was a complete and utter lie that I made up about moving to that really nice place near you.
What is this person's life? Talk about the need to be yourself. Yeah, that sounds wild. And it also sounds like you were spot on with your gut instincts. But so often we can, like, question ourselves or we want to see the best in people, and you knew he was going to ghost you maybe before he even did.
Well, yes. I think, though, that's part of the problem is that as you go through dating experiences, you get hardened. And I resent that. I resent that I feel myself hardening, because you want to be open to the right person. You want to be a nice person. You want to, they're people, they're humans. And I'm a mother. And so I think that's part of it. Like, you know, you want to care for them and you want to care about them and be cared for. And so I don't like it when I have to use that knowledge and go, okay, I've been dicked about, this guy's ghosted me, I need to protect myself. I hate all of that. I think it's awful. You know, why couldn't he say, listen, the moving's a lie? We might even have moved through it if it was an actual lie. If he actually said, look, I was trying to impress you, but I'm not actually, like, maybe we could have moved through it. But this whole thing of picking a fight with me about why I'm still on a networking app that he insists on staying on. He could have left it on the Saturday when I said, I guess this is it then. He called me up in a panic and went, no, 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 we just had a fight. People who date have fights sometimes. And I went, all right, because I'm new to dating. I've not dated. I've never dated. I literally fell into marriage. I fell out of high school and into marriage. I have no idea about dating. And the conversation we had earlier about how much of yourself you show on a first date, where we've both, you know, where we've generally said it's best to show your real self. And I think that's, for me, that's always going to be how I'm going to do it. But I had an argument with this same guy about how much of the crazy do you show? And he's like, you don't show all the crazy, not at first. And I went, yeah, but isn't that best to just go, look, here's all the crazy and here's the nice. Can you handle them both? And he went, no, you drip feed the crazy. You drip feed it over time. And then, and I was going, I fundamentally disagree with that. But then he gave me an example and I went, no, that's not right at all. He said, it's like when you sell a car, you don't tell them everything that's wrong with the car. You tell them one or two things. And I went, excuse me? No, you tell them everything that's wrong with the car. You don't call them up a month into it and go, hey, how's it going? If you filled the tank, yeah, you shouldn't do that. There's a hole in the gas canister. You know,
nobody's doing that.
Well, nobody's doing that.
He's trying to kind of sell it morally that you just rip someone off and then you let them figure it out. Nobody's selling the car and then being like, oh, by the way, I'm not obligated to call you now. We've signed the contract, but just so you know. No, fuck that. Yeah. I hate this
so
guy. I've got so invested in this.
I feel sorry for this guy. I think that that's, oh, there's me pitying him. Am I judging him? Am I judging him with pity? Is that me judging him? I don't feel sorry. I just.
You want him to be better.
For his sake. For his sake, I want him to be better. Because here's the thing is that I picked him. I picked him to share my life for 3 weeks. It doesn't serve me mentally to think, wow, I have no taste in men, or I don't know how to judge people that I let him into my life. And he was such a horrendous human being. And I don't think he is a horrendous human being. I think he's misguided. I think he's finding his way through life the way the rest of us are. I think he made some incredible decisions that I hope I don't make to somebody else. I don't fundamentally want to hate him because that just reflects back on me. And that's the biggest thing that I'm scared of going through this is going, how many times am I going to misjudge people letting them in, getting hurt by them, and then realizing it's, yeah. So
yeah, because on one hand, you want to, like, I understand what you're saying about, like, you do get toughened up by these experiences, like, absolutely same here. But also I think, yeah, absolutely, we can resent that because we don't want to feel we are being changed by that, that we are then having to become responsible for navigating other people's behavior because they're not behaving. That doesn't really feel like a victory.
No, well, exactly. And so even though it ended the way it ended, I wish him well.
Yeah.
I still want him to do well. I want him to have the capacity to be better. And if not with me, then with whomever he ends up sharing his life with. Because then that means that he is a good person, and I did see that in him. I just wasn't the right person for him, and that I can live with. Mm-hmm.
And as we wrap up then, normally we choose a rule of the game, but I know you're short on time, so I'm going to take your one as...
Wait, there are rules? Tell me what the rules are.
Well, normally we choose one, so we each suggest a rule of the game that people should be going by.
Let's do it.
Yeah? Are you okay?
Let's do it. Yeah.
All right. So I've got one in mind, which just very much links to this whole conversation, which is just the reminder of be yourself. It's better for you. It's better for everyone else. And I think a lot of the time I just try and look at it from the other side. Like whatever pressures we might feel, whatever ridiculous mantras of hide the crazy, I want to know who the other person is in front of me. And I respect their right to have the same desire.
Nice. I like that.
That's my rule for today. So have you got one?
Yes, I think mine is the classic golden rule, do unto others as you have done unto yourself. And it's hard. It is really hard. I'll admit that myself. But if you would prefer people to sign off with a little message before they no longer have you in their life, then do the same to others. You know, if you would prefer, I mean, it works both ways. If you would prefer to not have to sit through an hour of drinks with someone because you just know it's not going to work out, then, you know, be polite and end it early and save you both an hour of your time. But just every time something happens to you or you hear of a poor behavior that happens to somebody else, try your utmost not to perpetuate that by going, well, if everyone's doing it, I'll do it. Like, let's try and be better. Let's just try and make the dating experience better. And if there's enough of us in there just trying to improve things, and hopefully that'll spread exponentially and make it a more pleasant experience.
There we go. What a call to action. And so if people want to hear more from you, talking about uplifting online content, where can they find
you? Come to my website, realina.com, or find me on the social media of your choice. You know which ones I'm on because we mentioned it at the beginning of the episode. But I'm also on tour later this year around Britain, but we're looking to expand that into phase two. So if we get enough requests for other places, then we look into adding that date. So please do drop me a message and let me know.
And if nothing else, visit the website because it's so well put together. The amount of janky comedian websites out there. Yours is so easy to navigate. It's very modern. It's like a website / link tree. So yeah, would recommend a visit.
Thanks.
And thank you for your time.
Pleasure. Are we splitting the bill or are you picking this up in the old-fashioned way?
Thanks for listening.
For the full experience, you can join our subscription on Apple Podcasts to access extended ad-free episodes. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta.
The music is Digital Damage by me, Emma Becco.
We're proud to be an independent production.
And leaving a quick review is another way to support the show.
Speak to you next Friday. Until then, good luck out there.